Hello and welcome. I'm Michael Caluza with the New York Prosecutors Training Institute. Earlier this week, the New York State Court of Appeals issued a decision entitled People v. Mosley. It was issued on April 23rd of 2024. And in that case, the Court of Appeals reversed a case involving a law enforcement officer who at trial made an identification of a subject from a security video, a video where he was not present in the video and did not witness the actual events. And the Court of Appeals articulated an important rule. And in finding reversible error, the court set forth a test for determining the admissibility of non-eyewitness identifications from videos. The proffering party, in this case it was the people, number one, would have to show that the witness is sufficiently familiar with the defendant that their testimony would be reliable, and number two, that there is reason to believe the jury might require such assistance in making its independent assessment. And the issue of whether or not a witness is sufficiently familiar with the defendant is to be assessed against the totality of the circumstances of the case. Now, the court was concerned over testimony from law enforcement witnesses about prior familiarity with the defendant because of the potential for prejudice in allowing the jury to hear about the defendant's prior contact with the police. At the same time, the court was concerned about the impact of limiting such testimony because it might adversely affect defense counsel's ability to fully confront and cross-examine the law enforcement witness about the basis for his identification. And the court found that the people's evidence of prior familiarity that was brought forth in this case was insufficient. Now, it's significant to note that the detective did testify that he had sat in rooms with the defendant, Mr. Mosley, had walked side by side with Mr. Mosley, and had had the occasion to speak with Mr. Mosley. And yet, in the end, the court found this was, in fact, insufficient. While that may seem like a solid foundation, the court hit upon other deficiencies in the proof. Specifically, they found that there was a lack of specificity as to how many times, for how long, or what the nature of the prior interactions were between the police witness and the defendant. Also lacking was whether or not the detective had interacted with the defendant on more than one day. The court further noted that simply looking at photographs of the defendant would not be a proper basis for familiarity on the part of the police witness. From the proof, it was unclear whether the detective ever interacted with the defendant outside of the police station or whether his contacts were strictly limited to things that went on a particular occasion within the precinct. The detective was also unfamiliar with the defendant's appearance at the actual time of the crime. The detective also did not connect any distinctive traits of the defendant to the person depicted in the surveillance video, so there wasn't any comparison between observed traits and those traits which appear in the video. Also lacking was any proceedings whereby the people elicited grounds for familiarity with the physical attributes of the defendant before the judge and outside of the jury's presence when laying the foundation for the admission of that detective's testimony. It would have avoided potential prejudice and allowed for a robust cross-examination on that foundation. And also, the detective did not specify what is unique about any of the defendant's features or connect those features to his identification of the image in the video. So what are the takeaways from this decision? Well, number one, the people are obligated to show that the non-eyewitness, police witness typically, has an ability, a present ability, to identify the defendant reliably from viewing that video when taken in connection with all of the other information they've come to know about the defendant through prior interactions. So the people must make an adequate record that the witness has sufficient prior knowledge to identify. In this case, there was no showing that the proffered witness was sufficiently familiar with the defendant to render his testimony helpful, or that the jury faced an obstacle to making the identification that the witness's testimony would have overcome. Drawing attention to prior interactions with the police is probably necessary in most cases, but it may be prejudicial, and the court was mindful of this. Limiting this testimony to mitigate prejudice may also run up against the defendant's Sixth Amendment right to confront and cross-examine the witness against him. Now, whether the probative value of such identification testimony outweighs these drawbacks is a decision committed to the sound discretion of the trial court, and it is reviewable on appeal under an abuse of discretion standard. So the key issue is, in any case where you're trying to introduce such lay testimony, will the opinion testimony serve to aid the jury in making an independent assessment regarding whether the person in the surveillance video footage was indeed the defendant? There must be some basis for concluding that the witness is more likely to correctly identify the defendant from the video than is the jury. So the court must employ a totality of the circumstances test, which preserves the discretion of the trial court. Trial court, being closest to the facts of the case, is in the best position to make these evidentiary decisions. First, the court must determine whether the witness has had sufficient contact with the defendant to achieve a level of familiarity that renders the lay opinion helpful. And if the witness lacks such familiarity, it is the province of the jury to draw its own conclusions regarding the identity of the person depicted without the witness's assistance. So, factors for a court to consider in weighing this: the witness's general level of familiarity with the defendant's appearance, whether the witness's familiarity spanned an extended period of time and a variety of circumstances, or whether it was limited, whether the witness was familiar with the defendant's appearance at the time the surveillance video footage was taken, whether the witness's familiarity with the defendant's customary manner of dress or clothing on the day of the surveillance footage was present, and whether the witness references a specific trait that the defendant has, such as a distinctive gait or a scar or a tattoo, and, very importantly, whether they identify that trait actually in the surveillance footage. So that first factor that was examined by the Court of Appeals addresses whether or not that particular lay witness, typically a police witness, actually has the ability to make an accurate, trustworthy identification from the video based on all of the surrounding circumstances. And then from there, the court went to the second factor, or the second consideration, which is whether the jury needs the witness's assistance. And on this issue, the Court of Appeals suggested that the trial court should consider whether the defendant's appearance changed between the time of the surveillance footage and the trial, because that would presumably put a jury viewing that footage at a disadvantage. A court should also consider whether the defendant disguised himself in the surveillance footage. And the court should also consider the quality of the surveillance footage and the extent to which the subject is clearly captured in the frame. Is the image clear enough to permit the witness to identify, but not so clear that any juror could easily do so as well? So the interesting thing to note in this decision is the court seems to be saying, look, the video images can't be crystal clear, because then the jury is perfectly capable of making its determination on its own. And yet it can't be so poor that nobody could make a reliable identification from it. So the court seems to be suggesting that the video needs to lie somewhere in that middle ground. The court went on to consider the procedure, the preferred procedure or best practice for determining admissibility. And the Court of Appeals determined that a trial court, before admitting such opinion testimony, should inquire as to the basis of the witness's familiarity. That inquiry should occur outside of the presence of the jury in a separate hearing or voir dire type of proceeding. And it should be noted that the trial court properly did so in this case. The party offering the witness bears the burden of establishing that their testimony would both be helpful and necessary, and both parties must create a thorough record to aid the court in its determination and to allow for meaningful appellate review. The court went on to discuss the value, indeed the necessity, of cautionary instructions when such testimony is admitted. As a best practice, it would be appropriate for the trial court to provide cautionary jury instructions both at the time of the testimony and during the final charge. And in those instructions, should explain to the jury that lay non-eyewitness identification testimony is mere opinion testimony, which they may choose to accept or reject, and reminding the jurors at the same time that because they are the finders of fact, It is their opinion as to whether the defendant is depicted in the surveillance footage.
We hope that this summary of People v. Mosley will be helpful to you in your daily practice, and we encourage everyone to read the full decision on Prosecutor's Encyclopedia under the New York Court of Appeals Watch page. Big thanks to Glenn Green, Chief of Appeals for Suffolk County, who created a summary upon which this podcast was based. His summary is also available on PE under Court of Appeals Watch.
Additionally, in situations when you're contemplating introducing identification testimony based solely on the viewing of a security video, or you're seeking narrative description testimony about what's going on in a video that's not entirely clear, we encourage everyone to consult PE. We have extensively researched this topic. Those pages are narrating a video, or you can also look at play the video. Either one of those pages will provide you with the latest cases and useful information on that topic. And thank you for tuning in.